In the Shakespeare play Julius Caesar, Mark Antony asks a question that echoes down to our time.
Was this ambition?
Ambition, what is it? In our time, it's a kind of hope, I think. People taking on the impossible, the unimaginable, grasping up the vertical wall of the seemingly impossible. We want to spend some time on this program celebrating the impulses of the wildly ambitious. We begin with someone who 14 years ago was written about this way, quote, he's got his sights on higher, much higher things than mere laughs, on a whole series of themes so weighty that any one of them would be enough to give considerable heft to an ordinary novel. That was the New York Times review by Francine Prose for novelist Jonathan Safran Foer, his very first novel, Everything is Illuminated. Foer, it turns out, is up to the challenge. His new book, Here I Am, places the reader in the middle of a failing marriage, a crumbling planet, and a national crisis that forces civilization to rethink its identity through religion. Somehow the story of Jacob and Julia Block and their three sons, quarantined into 4 short weeks, feels like an epic. But it's more than worthy of the devilishly clever laughs Jonathan Safran Foer gives us.
You know, there's a lot of cultural specificity in this book, a lot more than I think any of my other books. But the things that I was writing, that I felt that I was writing about, and you know, you know what I was writing about as well as I know what I was writing about, but the things I felt like I was writing about were not in any way specifically Jewish or specifically American or specifically contemporary, but ideas of home, ideas of conflicting identities and the pain that that causes one to have. You know, the knowledge that we are not in any one place in our lives, but in not only multiple places, but places that are often competing with each other as a parent, as a professional, as a person in a relationship, as a person who has perhaps some religious ideas or values and then secular ideas or values, and the ways that those things rub against each other. And that's what I felt like I was writing about. And I, you know, used the resources that I had. And Judaism is a big resource for me in terms of the stories that I can appeal to, a kind of vernacular. It's my way of being.
The voice in this book, and I won't call it you, but is someone who has a huge joy about the feast that is possible in life right now. You've got Second Life, and you've got Israel, and you've got media, and all these various things. Did you ever experience Second Life, this kind of digital parallel world, directly?
I didn't, but I have to say I absolutely love that description of the book. That's how I feel about it, and that's how I feel about the characters. You know, one could easily say it's a book about like things dissolving or breaking apart or fragmenting, and I don't think of it that way at all. I think of it as a very like hopeful and optimistic book about people who are hungry and people who want what they believe life has to offer, even if it doesn't actually have that to offer. So Sam, the oldest child who's 13, spends an awful lot of his waking hours in this game called Other Life, but you refer to it as Second Life because, you know, it is somewhat like Second Life. I haven't spent a lot of time there. In fact, you could probably count the minutes I've spent there on one of my hands. But I wanted to give him an elsewhere. Each of the characters has an elsewhere. Jacob has an elsewhere in an affair, mm-hmm. and an elsewhere in this sort of secret artistic project he's working on. Julia, his wife, who's an architect, has an elsewhere in these homes that she designs for herself, imaginary homes that she'll never end up living in. But the challenge for all of these people is how to just be where you are, not even to find contentedness, which I think is an unrealistic goal or sounds a little flaky, but how to simply be present where you are and say, where my body is, my mind also is.
At the center of this book is a marriage. And the qualities that divide this couple are things that they think about each other, expectations that they have for each other, which is the way a marriage typically works. But what brings them together are things that they share without thinking. The space of the world. All right, we've got to stop talking about that and deal with this earthquake or whatever's happening. It was so hopeful how these two come together when they need to.
It's hopeful and it's tragic, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they operate on two levels, like the level of living and doing and then the level of thinking and feeling. And so on the level of living and doing, they're great. Like they are constantly getting closer. They're getting better at, you know, fulfilling what's required of them as partners and as parents. whether grocery shopping, cooking, cleaning up, coordinating schedules, thinking about the kids together in, you know, caring ways. And but then on the level of the sort of primitive or the desire, they become alienated from each other and from themselves.
Is that to say that parenthood and that kind of teamwork in a marriage is unfulfilling?
No, not at all. But it might be to say that a certain kind of closeness can preclude another kind of closeness. I know somebody who was with the same person for decades and decades. And I said, what was the secret? How'd you make that work? And she said, there's always something unknowable about him. There's always something that was mysterious, some distance I couldn't cross. So you would think that might be the explanation for why something didn't work. But what she had was this space that was beckoning. And I think the tragedy in this relationship in the book between Jacob and Julia is that there was no original sin. No, nobody wronged the other. They can't explain what the origin of the distance between them or which became a withholding was, other than maybe a certain kind of closeness.
Who says, here I am, the title of this book?
Oof. I don't know. I'm not really sure.
It's from the Bible.
Oh, well, in that sense, literally, it refers to the story of the binding of Isaac, which begins, and then God put Abraham to the test. He said, Abraham. Abraham said, here I am. And God said, I need you to sacrifice your beloved son. So the sort of obvious interpretation of that passage is that the test is the sacrifice. But maybe it's just simply, how will you respond? And when I was puzzled by your question, who says, here I am, I'm not sure. It's certainly what Jacob is striving to do. And there's a moment at the end when he says, the final words of the book are, I'm ready. And it seems like he is ready to claim an identity, but I'm not sure if readers will agree with him.
But what an audacious thing to say at the beginning of a huge piece of work like this. I mean, you're going for broke.
Well, you know, what else is there to go for? I did the best that I could in a very personal way. And now, you know, going out into the world with it and having to talk about it, it feels sometimes like I'm talking about it in a language that is completely other from the one in which I wrote it. I mean, in the sense of what, you know, you opened this interview by talking about ambition. Even the notion of that word being passed between two people feels so strange to me because the ambition was so personal, you know, from the first word to the last.
Well, that's you all over. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I really appreciated this conversation.
Jonathan Safran Foer is the Lillian Vernon Distinguished Writer in Residence at the Creative Writing Program at New York University, author of the novels Everything is Illuminated and Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, and most recently, Here I Am, in bookstores now.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.